This is ESPN Radio.
It feels like a beautiful morning right now. Waking up on the first football Monday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Chris, how do you watch football now? I mean, obviously, for anyone who doesn't know, you played in the NFL for a whole number of years. You live Sundays as a player. How do you watch as a fan now?
I got to be locked in. I don't watch with a whole bunch of people around. It's just me on my couch. I got my wings. I got my pizza, a nice frosty beverage. But that's how I'm getting down. I like to really get locked in on the games. And I don't need a whole lot of distractions pulling me in different directions. I put the phone on silent so nobody's bothering me while I'm dialed into football.
I think that's the right way to go about it, Chris, because I know for you, you root for the Baltimore Ravens more. I mean, we heard it.
Oh, no doubt.
Everyone's heard it in the promo, a team you spent time with here. And so you can understand that, because for a lot of people, I always deal with this. I'm a Notre Dame fan. I don't like to watch Notre Dame games with other people. I don't like who I am during those games. And so sometimes it's better to just give everyone space, not for you, but for their safety.
Yeah. How nervous were you watching that game this weekend with Toledo?
Chris, I was watching that game. I was down on the field. I was getting ready to call. My dad was on the radio call for North Carolina State at Mississippi State. I was on the TV call. We were down on the field before the game, watching on our phones Notre Dame take it down to the wire with Toledo. I was not in a good headspace. That was not okay what happened there. So I'm hoping for better for you tonight with the Raiders and the Ravens in Monday Night Football.
Oh, it absolutely better be better. I'm telling you, the regular season opener, they better take care of their business tonight. I don't want to hear about injuries. I don't want to hear about the running back situation. I mean, the Raiders have been defense optional, so that Baltimore Ravens offense should have no issues being able to move the ball up and down the field.
Well, for more on that, because we've got a lot of news around this right now that we've been seeing going on. So as we head into tonight, we're going to head to the Goodyear Hotline now to talk to Tyler Foljam, who's with us, our ESPN Sports betting analyst. You can also hear him on ESPN Radio doing a great job with the folks at the Daily Wager. And Tyler, as we head into tonight and we start looking at some of these lines, start looking at some where people are laying down money, how have the injury situations around both the Baltimore Ravens running back group that we know has been pretty beat up and the news from Adam Schefter, our ESPN NFL insider, that Josh Jacobs, who was downgraded earlier this week, now apparently looks like he's on track to play tonight?
Yeah, Golic, Chris, it's an interesting matchup here, because before the season, I would have thought for sure the Ravens are going to win this game. They're so much better, so much deeper, better coach with John Harbaugh versus John Gruden. And Baltimore is just the easy play at -4, -4.5. But we know what happened to the Ravens during this training camp from hell. They lost like every single running back that ever suited up to play for them. They're down now to Tyson Williams and Le'Veon Bell and Latavius Murray. So I'm a little leery of laying points on the Ravens side, even though I think that's the right move, because John Harbaugh is 10-4 in week one against the spread in his career. But I'm kind of staying away from the side in total just because of all the issues on the injury front with the Ravens. And situationally for the Raiders, like, they're playing in front of their home fans for the first time. That might be a little jacked up. You might get the ceiling performance. You might get the best version of the Raiders you see all season long in week one, because it's a great opponent. It's primetime island game, and the fans will be loud Raider Nation at Allegiant Stadium. But I feel more comfortable, I guess, about creating a game script, so to speak, that is centered around the Ravens running the rock at a suspect defense and Raiders offense trying to chuck the rock with Derek Carr and Darren Waller. So Derek Carr, I have over 33.5 passing attempts, especially if the Ravens get ahead early. You know Carr is going to have to chuck that rock to try and catch up. But even if the script is flipped and the Raiders are the team that jumps out to a big lead, I think it's more likely that they do that through Derek Carr throwing to guys like Henry Ruggs, Darren Waller, and Brian Edwards, Hunter Renfrow, than they are turning around and handing off to maybe a compromised Josh Jacobs, maybe Kenyon Drake, who they brought in and paid a lot of money. So no matter what kind of script, I think it's more likely we see Derek Carr throw the rock a lot over 33.5 passing attempts. On the Baltimore side, it's the exact opposite. I think they're going to have to run the rock. Even without Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins, Tyson Williams now is going to be the bell cow back. I'm going over 14.5 rushing attempts there. Lamar Jackson, consequently, I'm going to go under 28.5 passing attempts for the QB of Baltimore. Rashad Bateman's on IR, their first-round draft pick. They did bring in Sammy Watkins, who will play. Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews are holdovers. But the strength of this team and this offense is on in their offensive line and their running game. And they have Ronnie Stanley, their big left tackle back. They have Lamar Jackson, who can design runs for, and he can just run away from everyone. So I like him going under in terms of his passing attempts, 28.5. And I do think he does break a big play against a Raiders defense I don't have much respect for, so I'll take his over 72.5 rushing yards for the former league MVP.
Tyler, are there any other spreads that you like within this game? I know some people look at first quarter, some people look at first half. Do you see any other plays that you like throughout the course of tonight's game?
Yeah, Chris, like I said, I think I'm leaning more towards the Raven side if you force me to make a bet, which of course you don't have to do, guys. I know we want action on an island game, but you don't have to make a bet if you're not comfortable. Like I said, the one trend that stands out to me for John Harbaugh and the Ravens, and I don't know if you heard this, but Harbaugh doesn't lose in the preseason. He's won 19 games in a row. He's like 17-1-1 ATS for the last 5 years in the preseason. He's also really, really good carrying that momentum from the preseason over to week one. 10-4 in his career against the spread in week one. And the number's starting to swing towards the Raiders side. I think it's now gotten down below 4. It's now -3.5. I do think the Ravens are the better team. I would take them on the spread. If you're more comfortable laying a smaller number in the first half, I think they can build a lead as well through the first two quarters. Chris, maybe you can speak better to that with how games usually flow when a team that's dealing with injuries. Do they come out right away, and when they're especially better and deeper, do they come out right away and put it on the opposition? Or do you think maybe the Ravens will have to get adjusted, get used to things, and then use the second half and dominate in the second half? So you being someone who played in the NFL, I'll yield to your expertise there. But I do think if you want a smaller number, you can play the Ravens in the first half, which will probably be -2 or -1.5. You can play them in the second half. It'll be similar there. I just think they're the better, deeper team, even with all the injuries they've suffered.
Tyler, I will say this. I think the Ravens do come out and get out to a fast start just because when you have a lot of moving parts, especially on offense, the tendency would be that you would want to script those first 15, first 20 plays, make sure that everybody that's in there is comfortable with what you're going to be doing. And I think that could lead to the Ravens building some early momentum. So I like the actual first half play. I wanted to get your take on this point. With Marcus Peters being out, how much does that affect the overall line throughout the course of this game?
Yeah, I think it makes it the over a little bit more probable or a little bit more likely because, again, the strength of the Baltimore Ravens on their defense is their secondary. Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters were as good a cornerback tandem as there was in the National Football League. And the Ravens always have depth because they draft so well, but that depth is going to be tested because say what you will about John Gruden's ability to coach a complete team. He can still coordinate and call a pretty dang good offensive game. The issue with the Raiders last year was not that they couldn't score the rock. It was that they couldn't stop anyone. So if the Ravens are coming in at less than 100%, compromised, especially at cornerback, you have Henry Ruggs with 4.27 speed. You have Darren Waller, who's maybe the second most gifted pass-catching tight end in the NFL, second or third, right there with the Kittles and the Kelseys of the world. And then you have a guy in Bryan Edwards who hasn't yet established himself in the NFL, but if you've been following, you know, Raider Nation on Twitter for the past couple of training camps, there are people who legitimately believe he's like the second coming of T.O. and Randy Moss combined into one. He's 6'3", 220, has good speed, you know, great body control in the air to attack the ball at its highest point. So there's weapons for John Gruden to use against a compromised Baltimore secondary. And I know the Raiders don't have a really good defense. They didn't last year. They didn't do much to improve it in my eyes this offseason. And even with the compromises on the Ravens side, losing Gus Edwards, losing J.K. Dobbins, not having Rashad Bateman ready, that's an offense that can still score a lot of points because Lamar Jackson is just so dang dynamic. So I'd probably lean over despite the fact that I think the unders were 9-6 in week one so far. It wasn't a major trend, but a little bit to the under. This is a game, though, with Baltimore's defense not being quite 100% and the Raiders not having a very good defense at all. At least that's what I'm projecting. Over 50.5 is a way I would lean. But again, it's not a strong conviction like I have with the player props.
Great stuff from Tyler Foljam. You can check him out as a part of the Daily Wager as well as on ESPN Radio around here on the weekends. Tyler, we appreciate all the insight, man. Best of luck and enjoy the game tonight, all right?
Yeah, we'll enjoy and look forward to chatting with you guys all season long.
Absolutely. A reminder, Tyler liked Derek Carr over 33.5 passing attempts. Tyson Williams over 14.5 rushing attempts. Lamar Jackson over 72.5 rush yards. And Lamar Jackson under 28.5 passing attempts as some good props in that game. We'll get plenty more on that, as Tyler said, all week and all season long from him. But coming up next, We got to ask one very serious question to one coach in the NFL. What is it going to take for the rookie to get on the field? We'll get to that next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750, $700, excuse me, on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We'll get back to the NFL in 10 minutes with Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, who's a part of that NFL live crew you're going to be able to see on a megacast for Monday Night Football tonight. But we got breaking news here, Chris. Mike Bond, the athletic director at USC, just tweeted out a statement that we are making a change in the leadership of our football program. The statement reads in part, quote, "This afternoon I informed Clay Helton of my decision to make a change in the leadership of our football program. Clay is one of the finest human beings I've met in this industry, and he's been a tremendous role model and mentor for our young men. We appreciate his many years of service to our university and wish him nothing but the very best." They went on to say, "This season is just getting started, and we have the opportunity to really do something special with this team and program. I'm confident that as our interim head coach, Dante Williams, gives us a higher probability for success the remainder of the season." So Clay Helton, after 2 weeks, out as the USC head coach. And Chris, I don't know if this one outcome-wise is surprising, but timing-wise, heading into week three of the season, it is amazing how quick we got here.
Yeah, that's the surprise for me. I guess the loss to Stanford over the weekend, where they were home favorites by 17 points, is enough to seal his fate. But ultimately, it felt like we were heading down this road. Even in coming into this year, there were some questions about him potentially being on the hot seat and the job security and the overall direction of the program. So a little bit surprising that they would make this move so early in the season, but I guess the athletic director has seen enough. And quite frankly, to see USC, the state of that program, where they're at right now, knowing that they haven't even been close to competing to be in the college football playoff in the lifetime of that entity's existence, to see how far this program has kind of fallen, I think that's enough to understand that they need to have a fresh pair of eyes on this situation, because right now, I don't think USC knows where it's going in terms of being able to reestablish their program in the Pac-12 and in the national college football landscape.
Yeah, Chris, it's interesting because when you read the resume, it sounds different than what we all know and have seen, right? So Clay Helton started off as the quarterback's coach at USC in 2010. He was an interim head coach twice before he ended up taking over as the head coach in 2015. As a head coach, he was 46-24 and had 12 wins over AP top 25 opponents, but Chris, I think when we think of USC as a program, at least the one, I grew up in college football as a fan in the early 2000s when it was the Pete Carroll era USC Trojans defining college football for me as a kid. And one of the things that defined that was in the Pac-10 then, or the Pac-12 now, they owned recruiting. They were Hollywood. They were the team in Southern California before they got the NFL back there. And when you had things like a few years ago, them signing what was right around the 50th ranked recruiting class in college football, losing some of these marquee quarterback prospects to the likes of Clemson and these other schools, you started to see them slip the grip on a place that, when it's humming right, should be the easy standard bearer for the Pac-12. It's part of the reason I think that conference has suffered so much in recent years. So, Chris, when you look at this program right now, not based on what I just described, what they were, but who they are now, is this still an elite program? Like, is this still a job that's going to be able to go out and pluck a prime candidate from the coaching pool?
No, I still think it's one of those once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. I still think it's that kind of job. It has that level of prestige. But to your point, I don't think the program has the overall cachet when it comes to being able to recruit high school kids and get them to sign up to come play out there. I think that's the bigger issue. And so moving forward, their athletic director has to find somebody that has that name recognition, a name that resonates with high school kids, because that's what's ultimately going to turn the tide and get this program headed in a direction that all the USC fans and USC alums want it to be going in. But to be largely irrelevant during the college football playoff era and to see programs like Oregon go into Ohio State and be able to pull off upset wins against top five ranked opponents, that's got to be one of those things that provides a little bit of perspective in terms of just how far USC as a program is away from being able to compete for a Pac-12 title, but also to be able to compete for a national championship.
Yeah, and really you'd have to go back to, I think it was 2017 when Sam Darnold was there. They started a different quarterback for the first 3 weeks of the season. They then went on a tear once Sam took over, ended up in that Rose Bowl against Penn State that was electric. But outside of that, there hasn't been that high watermark for a coach in Clay Helton, who was hired largely in the same way Ed Orgeron was, where the players, when he took over as the interim guy, responded well. They wanted to keep him around there. But we've seen changes in the administration, changes in the athletic director in that time. You mentioned the name they should go after next, Peter Burns, one of our great SEC Network hosts and host of Best Week Ever on ESPN Radio Sunday mornings, offered up one name this past weekend about how Southern Cal should be looking towards as Clay Helton struggled.
If I'm Southern Cal's leadership right now, I hop into DeLorean and I fix what I messed up in 2011. I make one phone call and I give that phone call over to Lane Kiffin and I say, come save Southern Cal right now. You call Lane Kiffin. It would be a no-brainer for Southern Cal to hire Lane Kiffin, and it would be a no-brainer for Lane Kiffin to take that job if offered.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And Chris, I'm not going to lie, so this is weird because I'm getting ready to go do Ole Miss's game this weekend against Tulane. I'm getting ready to cover this team. But when I hear Peter lay that out, it doesn't sound crazy. Like, a lot of people have looked. Lane Kiffin has had a winding road since he got left on the tarmac there at USC. It's been what looks like now a different version of him, to the point where we live long enough to watch him be the voice of reason in the conversation around having his team vaccinated this offseason, in the way that he's approached these things. And so there's a lot of me that looks at what Peter says and goes, yeah, for a guy that has brought attention to every program he's been a part of, that has revitalized that, that can recruit well, that's a lot of the areas you need if you're Southern Cal. You need the version of him you didn't get in that first go-round.
Well, listen, I'm not saying that Lane Kiffin should be off the table, but I'm also willing to explore other options, right? Like, I think that if that's your floor, if that's the person that you feel like you can get, I think that's something that you have to consider. But also, I think they need to expand this search, do an exhaustive search, and there are other names that are going to be out there as the season continues to unfold, people that are looking for new opportunities, coaches that emerge from the ranks, and I think that that's something that they also have to think about, because they got to make their next move their best move. And right now, this is a program that's scrambling to try to maintain relevancy within the national landscape. And this coaching hire is going to be a big deal. So they're going to have plenty of time. They're going to have first crack at being able to find who that next head coach is, just because of the timing of this being so early in the season. But, I mean, this is a pivotal hire that USC is going to make with this program right now, and they've got to make sure that they get this one right.
Chris, I'd say this for the Pac-12, for the newly formed Alliance, this could be the most important coaching hire for that entire group coming up here. Who USC decides to take into this next era for the program that, again, we saw Oregon get a marquee win this weekend. They have been the one that has stepped up and filled the void. But the Pac-12 will really ascend back to the place that we want to see them, that they want to see themselves as a conference, when USC takes up the mantle, when that brand is strong again in college football. So again, as stated in a statement by USC Athletic Director Mike Bond, Clay Helton out as USC's head coach. We'll get you more information on that as we keep going here today. But coming up next, we'll get to the biggest surprises from this NFL weekend with Mina Kimes. We'll do that after this word from Barbasol. Now, in 1919, Barbasol introduced the very first no-brush, no-lather, no-rub-in shaving cream. Today, we celebrate this milestone with a fresh take on the original. Introducing Barbasol 1919 Classic Shaving Cream, a culmination of over 100 years of shaving excellence. This new non-aerosol shaving cream is fortified with aloe, coconut oil, and shea butter to soothe and protect your skin. Paired with a fresh and calming fragrance, this ultra-stick formula delivers a shave experience like no other. Learn more at Barbasol.com. Mina Kimes joins us next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We'll get back to the news out of college football. Again, USC head coach Clay Helton out after 2 weeks of the 2021 season. We're going to be very excited to read all of your tweets telling us about how Urban Meyer is going to be the next head coach. I promise all of you are very original with that suggestion here. But we got Monday Night Football coming up tonight, and you're going to have a lot of ways to watch. We've got our normal crew in the booth for that game, as always. You're going to have Peyton and Eli hanging out for this game, or you can hop on the MegaCast with our folks and friends over at NFL Live. Mina Kimes, one of the co-hosts on NFL Live and the host of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, joins us now. Mina, would you have had to say no to this if it was a Seahawks game? Like, would you have been physically able to do this job?
No, I am a professional. Now, would there have been some tense moments, especially if it was like a close game or a weird game, as they tend to be? Perhaps I would have had to, you know, be physically restrained, but no, I absolutely would have done it.
Mina, your Seahawks aside, the marquee game yesterday was the Browns and the Chiefs, and I thought that last drive by Baker Mayfield was an opportunity for him to make a statement about what kind of quarterback he was and to make a statement about how much he should be paid by the Cleveland Browns in a contract extension. What do you make of Baker Mayfield coming up small in that situation?
Well, it's, to me, less about whether Mayfield is a franchise quarterback. I think he played really well up till that drive and certainly looks like one of the better quarterbacks in the league, and more about the gap between him and Patrick Mahomes, which is unfair, right? Because there's a gap between every quarterback and Patrick Mahomes. But I'll expand that and say the top tier of quarterbacks who kind of have those signature moments, those comeback drives, the execution you need at the end of the game, and really the lack of mental errors, which is kind of what befell Baker. And it's unfortunate because up until that point, he was extremely accurate and just totally in command of that offense. And so you hope he bounces back because this looks like a really good football team.
It does. Strong showing from them, Mina. But we've been talking all day on this show about big surprises from week one in the NFL. We know what happened to the Green Bay Packers. But for you, what stood out as the most shocking result we got this weekend?
Well, I certainly didn't expect the Saints to just absolutely whoop the Packers the way they did. I thought they'd keep it close because I think that's a good team. But, I mean, I also really didn't expect Arizona to do the same thing to Tennessee. I didn't expect Arizona to win. And there was a few things about that game that surprised me. I would say not just Kyler Murray being electric is something we've seen before, but the contributions he got from different members of that offense. And then on the other side of the football, we know Chandler Jones is great. Or if you don't know, you should know. We know, you know, that pass rush was good last year. But the secondary, the much maligned secondary, which I had pegged as a major concern coming into this season, looked surprisingly good. We know Buda Baker is good, but Byron Murphy Jr., his college teammate at Washington, I thought came up big. And that was not an easy, you know, passing attack to contain in terms of the weapons that the Titans have. So I was really impressed by that group.
Mina, in the Sunday night game, Matt Stafford did not disappoint. He let it air out. I think he averaged 12.3 yards per attempt. I mean, he was just letting it rip downfield. But on the other side of that, Andy Dalton underwhelmed in his debut as a Chicago Bears quarterback. You saw a red zone turnover in that game. How long is it going to be before Matt Nagy and the Bears coaching staff hand over the reins to Justin Fields?
You know, I really don't know because I don't understand why they do anything there, apparently. The logic escapes me. And it is also, I think, complicated by the fact that Andy Dalton was not terrible. Like, if he had come out and played horribly and thrown a bunch of picks instead of just once, I think it would have been easier for the team to say, okay, we get it, we get it. He, you know, this is an obvious decision. But he was competent. He wasn't great. He didn't elevate the cast around him, the offensive line being first and foremost a problem in Chicago, but he didn't play poorly enough to make it easy for them to give Fields a transition to, I believe, the Bengals next week, which would be ideal. If it was me, I would simply make the change now with the explanation that Justin Fields is the future of the franchise. You want to get him reps, but they don't seem to see it that way.
Mina Kimes, co-host of NFL Live and the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny podcast, with us on the Goodyear Hotline. We tease it off the top, Mina. Your Seattle Seahawks got a big-time win against a Colts defense that was great last year. Shane Waldron takes over as the OC. What did you see that made good on some of the promises from this offseason? Can Seahawks fans finally get excited about Russ cooking, et cetera?
Yeah, I think two things really jumped out to me. One, on offense, you wanted to see, okay, what does this Shane Waldron scheme look like? How similar is it to Sean McVay's? He comes from the Rams. And you definitely saw more of those principles in terms of the outside zone run game, the condensed formations, the looks they gave, which were confusing and where, you know, different players are doing different things and nobody's quite sure who's doing what. And I thought it clearly benefited Russell Wilson insofar as manufacturing easier completions and getting yards after the catch, which was really a problem for Seattle down the stretch last year. On the other side of the football, I was really impressed by the Seahawks defensive line, which is sneaky deep. They don't really have big names up front, but guys like Carlos Dunlap, Rasheem Green, Daryl Taylor, who had basically a redshirt season last year, all showed a lot of promise at times, and it looks like a good group.
Check out Mina Kimes on NFL Live each and every day and with the crew tonight on the MegaCast for Monday Night Football, Ravens and Raiders. Mina, always a pleasure. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll talk to you soon, friend.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome stuff from Mina. We'll get back to plenty more in the NFL and from you, 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. What was your biggest surprise from week one in the NFL? But coming up next, we'll get back to the news around Clay Helton, who USC goes after from here, and an interesting proposal in college football. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio after this word from RumbleOn. Now, do you have a motorcycle, an ATV, or even a truck that's sitting in your garage that you've been waiting to sell? With RumbleOn.com, you can easily turn your unused vehicle into cash in minutes. RumbleOn.com will give you a cash offer for your vehicle and pick it up for free, anytime, anywhere. Harley, Polaris, Can-Am, Yamaha, and even if you're just looking to trade in, RumbleOn will pay cash, no matter what the make or model. Visit RumbleOn.com today and enter promo code RADIO to get a $300 increase on your cash offer. Fast bikes, faster cash. Canty and Golic Jr. back with the latest from USC on ESPN Radio. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance and brought to you by Goodyear. With you for every mile on the road to greatness, Goodyear more driven. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, and again, the breaking news out of Southern California, Clay Helton out as the head coach of USC after going 1-1 through the first 2 weeks, including a brutal loss at home to Stanford, where, Chris, the scene there, heard a lot of voices leaving the stadium early, the remaining fans all chanting for them to fire Clay Helton. This was a move that felt inevitable, but felt like it really got expedited with how embarrassing that whole scene was this weekend.
Yeah, they were 17-point favorites against Stanford at home, and to get blown out in the fashion that they did against a team that nobody's expecting to do anything this upcoming season, that was enough for USC to decide that they were going to transition and go in a different direction. And I can't blame them, because the program has kind of fell out of relevancy when it comes to the national landscape in college football as a whole. So they've got to figure a lot of things out. I'm sure that Oregon doing what they did this past weekend didn't help, but it probably did put things in perspective for their athletic director, which is why they're making the move right now.
Yeah, Adam Rittenberg, who does a great job writing for us here about college football at ESPN, tweeted out, I'll have a full piece on the SC candidates later tonight. But he said James Franklin and Luke Fickell, who current USC athletic director Mike Bond hired while he was at Cincinnati, have to be up high. And throughout there, would P.J. Fleck be in the mix? And would USC make a run at Mario Cristobal? And it's so interesting to look at this, Chris, because I think we've got this idea in our head of what Southern Cal's coach looks like, right? This job always felt like, especially before Clay Helton, someone that was trying to grasp back at the best years of what they had under Pete Carroll. Anyone that was a part of that coaching tree there, and then someone that felt Hollywood. There felt like this burden to try and live up to what this team was in the past. And I wonder if they can get away with that, because like I saw other people recommend Matt Campbell at Iowa State, and all of these are great coaches, but they don't necessarily fit that mold out there. These are guys that seem like largely tied to Midwest programs. The style of play screams more Big Ten than it does Pac-12. And so I wonder how far outside of their comfort zone they're actually willing to go.
Well, I think they've got to do something different, right? They've got to think outside of the box, because what they've been trying to do, trying to stay with people that have associations with the program, just hadn't worked out for them. So I do think it's time to bring in a fresh set of eyes. And I understand wanting to make sure that you do have a head coach that has name recognition, a head coach that does bring that star power. But at the same time, you got to find somebody that can actually get it done in terms of being able to put a product out on the field that's representative of what all USC fans and USC alums have come to know. So I just think that they've got to shift gears in terms of their overall thinking. But they do have the advantage of time making this move as early as they have, because now they'll be able to, you know, open up the search, do an exhaustive search, go through a long process, and be able to land on the candidate that they think is what best suits the program moving forward.
And we mentioned this is probably the most important hire for the Pac-12 right now as a conference for the alliance that's trying to state its claim in college football. I know everyone's going to make Urban Meyer jokes based on his struggles in Jacksonville that we've already seen here. We already heard from Peter Burns this idea of throwing out Lane Kiffin, a potential reunion for a guy they left on the tarmac. But I saw Pete Thamel over at Yahoo Sports throw this one out. I'd probably think long and hard about moving heaven and earth to see if you could shake Chris Peterson out of retirement there. Guy who recruited very well and did well at Washington in the Pac-12. We know his success at Boise. He is a competent coach in a way that feels like having an adult in the room. He does not fit the profile that we talked about that all the Hollywood stuff. But like you said, just finding a good coach who can go out there and get the job done should be the entire priority at this point. And Chris Peterson, I know he's taken some time, a very introspective guy, maybe enjoying being away from all the stressors that he's been very open about as a head coach in football. But for that job, you wonder how hard it would be to say no and if they'll try and make him tell them no at least.
Well, Mike, doesn't this have to be a blank check situation? I mean, this is USC. This is one of the programs historically that has been a national powerhouse when it comes to the landscape of college football. So you would think that they would be able to pool whatever resources that they would need to in order to make sure that they went out and got their guy. So if it ends up being somebody like Chris Peterson, or if it ends up being somebody that's in the NFL ranks, you would think that they would pull out all the stops to be able to go after it and make sure that they land that plane. Because at this point, this program has got to do something drastic in order to get back into relevancy, in order to get back into being competitive at the national, at the highest levels when it comes to college football, not just the Pac-12.
Yep, it's got to get better. It's got to get more consistent. The recruiting had started to turn back up after a huge low a few years ago. But again, big decisions on the way for USC and that program. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Chris, off the field, well, sort of off the field this weekend in college football, we saw something pretty wild. Brady Scott, offensive lineman at Florida State, proposed after Florida State was upset by Jacksonville State. There was a picture that went around and went viral. You could see Jacksonville State celebrating in the background here. But he went ahead and did it, and Brady Scott's owned it on Twitter. It seems like both of them were thrilled. He got one win that day. I'm normally not a public proposal guy, Chris, but this one played pretty well for me. I felt pretty good about this.
Well, Mike, you know I just got proposed and I just got engaged, and I did my proposal in Central Park. So that to me was one of those nervous moments where it's just like, man, I'm doing this, and the fact that you got, you know, so many different people that are onlookers, so many people in public just looking at what you're doing, that can rattle your nerves. I'm sure that his nerves were even worse, knowing that they just took the L to Jacksonville State. But at the same time, you have to look at it as if she says yes under those circumstances while you're wearing that hot, fresh L, then she's got to be down for you. She's got to be a rider. She's got to be in your corner. So good on him for making it happen. I understand how having that ring can kind of burn a hole in your pocket and you want to just get it over with. But, probably not the way that he envisioned it when he thought about the idea of proposing after that game on Saturday night.
No, it's kind of like picking your homecoming game. You do it in a spot where you think you're going to get a pretty easy win here. But
well, they weren't 27-point favorites.
He thought right in the planning, the execution, we will see. But he did get a resounding yes. She looked thrilled. Chris, what is that moment like? Because I have not lived that yet. I don't know that feeling when you finally get down and do it here. Like, what was it like for you in the middle of Central Park?
Oh, I was a nervous wreck, Mike. First of all, I couldn't get my words together, and when I actually got down and got her name right and asked her to marry me, she just looked at me and she nodded. Nothing came out. She was trying to talk, but she couldn't speak. And so there's about that 20-30 second pause between when I asked her and when she actually said something where I didn't know which way this thing was going to go. And when you start talking about relativity, like I didn't that 30 seconds felt like an hour to me, but she actually finally came out and said yes. And we had a big laugh about it, and we took a look at the video that some of the bystanders had went ahead and shot us after all was said and done. But that is a nerve-wracking moment, my brother. Trust me. I'm telling you, you're going to be excited about it, but you're also going to be nervous about it.
You know what? I guess that's good, though. You took her breath away. It was actually a legitimately exciting, surprising moment there, and so we're glad it all worked out here, but I can't imagine how long that time felt. So congratulations to Brady Scott and his fiance. Congratulations to Chris Canty and his fiance. We'll get into the wedding planning at some point coming up here on the show because we know that's always going to be interesting. But coming up next, we'll look back at week one in the NFL and try and decide if what we saw was real or if it really was just week one next.